Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Colorado forbids counselors like Kaylee Childs from helping minors pursue state-disfavored goals on issues of gender and sexuality. This law prophylactically bans voluntary conversations, censoring widely held views on debated moral, religious, and scientific questions.
Now, I know the word prophylactically, he means that it prevents it in advance, but sometimes, you know, a good lawyer makes a choice to use a different word, because when you're talking about counseling people not to be so gay or so transgender, just contextually, prophylactically is not the word you ideally pick. Thwarts, prevents, inhibits, impedes, prophylactically. You don't have to say that, sir. Anyway, so this is James Campbell. He is the lawyer on behalf of the counselor in Colorado who felt that the law in Colorado that makes it unacceptable for somebody to counsel somebody else in any way that would inhibit their desire to engage in same-sex acts or would change their gender identity, sexual orientation, or gender identity. The actual law is very straightforward. It reads, hold on just a second, I had it up and then I didn't have it up, so here we go. All right, conversion therapy. This is actually House Bill 19-1129, passed in the Senate 21-13 and passed in the House 47-17. Conversion therapy means any practice or treatment by, this is Colorado, any practice or treatment by a licensed physician specializing in the practice of psychiatry that attempts or purports to change an individual's sexual orientation or gender identity. Okay? Including, as in, to be clear, including efforts to change behaviors, or gender expressions, or to eliminate or reduce sexual or romantic attraction or feelings towards individuals of the same sex. In other words, if somebody if a boy likes boys, a 15-year-old boy likes boys, comes to you as a counselor, and you try to get them to not act on it, feel it less, like girls, or anything like that, you're in violation of this ban. So she does exactly this counseling. She doesn't do any kind of aversion therapy. There's no kind of actions involved. It's purely talk. And she comes looking for protection. And all the lower courts have failed her and said that the law is fine because all it needs to meet is the rational basis test, which means that the law has to be connected to some reasonable purpose that government has. In this case, the certification of medical credentials in order to provide health care therapy of any sort. In this case, it doesn't involve medicine or surgery. It just involves talking. But if you're going to be licensed by the state, then you have to provide the best standards of care. And the best standards of care, according to the state of Colorado, do not include anything that chips away at, inhibits, reduces, or changes sexual orientation or gender identity. Clear? That's what the case is about at the Supreme Court. And of course, her lawyer says this is an absolutely unacceptable law because that stupid First Amendment.
Aside from this law and recent ones like it, Colorado hasn't identified any similar viewpoint-based bans on counseling. These laws are historic outliers.
It's a viewpoint discrimination, and viewpoint discriminations under First Amendment jurisprudence require a heightened level of scrutiny, sometimes called heightened, sometimes called strict. But that would mean all kinds of other things, like the government, even if they have a legitimate interest, has to try alternatives. They have to use the least restrictive means possible. And they have to not overly burden speech. And, you know, there's a lot of other rules other than, you know, rational basis test, which is we see a problem, the solution's related to the problem, all done. And so they say, no, you cannot do this.
Colorado insists that its law is subject only to rational basis review. Yet that would allow states to silence all kinds of speech in the counseling room, such as disfavored views on divorce or abortion.
Like everything that comes before the Supreme Court, this is a, well, if this, then what else? If a state can tell people that they cannot talk to minors with parental consent and with what the minor wants, this is not against the minor's will. This is what the minor feels conflicted about having same-sex desire or feeling alienated from their birth gender, okay, birth sex. Okay, that's where they come to you. And the state says you cannot talk to them in this direction about that, but you can talk to them in the other direction about it. You know, you can get them to be more gay or more trans. You can't get them to be less gay or less trans. Therefore, it's viewpoint discrimination. Therefore, it's a violation of free speech. And you could do this about anything. You know, you could make the counselor not advocate for divorce or advocate against it. You could make the counselor not advocate for abortion or against it. Or, I mean, almost anything else. You basically would turn the counseling profession into an arm of propaganda for the state because you could theoretically tell them in the talk-only environment, everything they can and cannot say.
If heightened scrutiny doesn't apply, states can transform counselors into mouthpieces for the government.
But also, he thinks, they can't win their case on heightened scrutiny precisely because the evidence that they have done the things that you would need to do on the heightened scrutiny is not there.
Here, Colorado can't satisfy any level of heightened scrutiny. It didn't seriously consider any less restrictive alternatives, and Colorado can't prove harm because it hasn't cited a study focusing on what's at issue here, voluntary speech between a licensed professional and a minor.
See, what Colorado is going to say is we have studies that show that, A, conversion therapy does not work. For 100 years, it's not worked. I mean, if it worked, people would do what worked. You know, if you could talk people out of being gay or trans, it would have been done. There's no such evidence, they say. B, there is evidence that trying to change people's sexual orientation or gender identity actually harms them because they try it, it fails, and then they feel worse about themselves because they bought into the idea that they could change it and then they can't actually change it. And that makes them even worse and harms them and makes them depressed or suicidal or whatever. And what he says is, we understand that's what you think the studies say, but those studies mix together people who are merely talking, people who are advocating for things like electric shock or making people vomit when they're connected to some idea of same-sex attraction, trying to associate a negative feeling with some desire. There's all kinds of things that people have tried, some of them quite horrible, and many of them quite horrible, and none of them work, and many of them are very harmful, and their studies mix all of that together. And so the claim that it harms people to do conversion therapy is based on, well, something else than what is happening in this case, which is just talk. Especially talk coming from a voluntary participant with parental consent, where all you're doing is talking to them about something they also want to change. You follow? So they say all of the data, all the studies don't justify what Colorado statute wants to do. So it's a really interesting conversation. Okay? And it's interesting because on the one hand, remember, when it comes to the Supreme Court, there's a lot of things that get muddied. Muddy for the ordinary person, because the ordinary person thinks that the story is about A, when really the question is usually not about what you think it is. What you think this is about is whether sexual orientation or gender identity are matters of morality and whether you are for or against them. That's what you think this is about. And, of course, that's what a lot of people would allege is going on in Colorado. You know, Colorado discriminates against the cake bakers who don't want to bake a gay cake. So they're discriminating against counselors who don't want to talk to people out of being gay. It sounds like that's the issue. And, I mean, you know, I think that's true. But that's not the question before the Supreme Court. The question before the Supreme Court is not whether you can, you know, whether being gay is bad or whether practicing gay behavior is bad or whether having gender dysphoria is a good thing, a bad thing, whether you should help them or not. That's not the issue. The issue is going to be, does the state have the authority to tell practitioners of healthcare what they can give people as guidance, advice, or therapy, especially when it's only talk, as in it doesn't involve any kind of hormones or surgeries or anything like that. Because what Colorado is going to say, what they do say, is if we can't regulate this, how are we going to prevent people from doing all kinds of crazy things under the guise of medical care? Right? If we can't tell doctors or counselors that they can't guidance somebody against their sexual orientation, well, how do we prevent people from doing all kinds of quackery? Because there's all kinds of quackery. And under the powers of the state, the police power to certify medical care, health care, the state wants the ability to say, you know what? That kind of guidance is wrong. That kind of guidance harms people. It is contrary to good science and good medical practice. And therefore, you can advocate for that all you like in your private life, in your pamphlets, on your website, even in your church. Even in, and this is kind of an interesting wrinkle, even in your life coach practice where you can charge money, because that's allowed under the law in Colorado. A life coach could try to get you to be less gay, but a counselor can't. It's not the changing of money even. It's the state certification of somebody's professional healthcare credentials. So the state comes to the Supreme Court and says, if you don't let us regulate this, what are we left to regulate? Whereas the plaintiff says, if you allow them to prohibit this, what can't they prohibit that's just speech? And that's the question. That's going to be the question before the Supreme Court. And it, you know what? It's a lot more complicated than you think. I come to this case really wanting the Supreme Court to strike down this repressive Colorado law that makes it not, crime is not quite right, but makes it so that prevents professionals who are Christians or who have traditional morals from helping families who want to help their kids who want to be less gay or less trans, which I think is a perfectly fine thing. Much like they are allowed to help the kids embrace their gender identity or their sexual orientation, which morally I don't think is a fine thing, but I do think is within the purview of the state to allow them to do that. And the question is, you know, can the state preference the one over the other? Is it speech or is it healthcare? If it's speech, they can't say this. If it's healthcare, maybe they can't. And that's going to be the question. And I'll give you my 8-second version of what I personally think in this case, how it should work out. I don't think this is what the Supreme Court is going to do, but here's how I think this should be resolved. I actually think that it is within the state's power to decide what a healthcare professional can and can't advocate for based on standards of care and what's helpful or harmful to the people. I do think there's that. But I also think there's got to be protections for people in what they say. And I don't want to see them overly burdensome in those regulations. Remember COVID when some doctors wanted to give you treatments that were not, you know, the preferred method by the CDC or the FDA? Medical freedom is also an issue. Medical freedom is not protected under the First Amendment the way you want it to be. The First Amendment is about opinions and politics and religion, right? But if you're in a professional licensing situation paying money, you know, fiduciary obligations and all that. So here's how I would answer this question. I don't actually think the First Amendment protects this speech, but I think that the Constitution doesn't only protect speech that's political or religious. I think that the Constitution recognizes principles that it doesn't explicitly say that include things like healthcare advice. And so the state should be on some kind of heightened scrutiny when it comes to giving out medical advice. It can't just tell you anything it wants, but it's also not really a free speech issue because there is the legitimate police power of protecting people's lives, and you don't want just plain quacks running around giving medical advice under their healthcare certificates. So it's a weird case. It's a hard case. It's not as simple as it might seem at first, and that's why I try to do this whenever the Supreme Court addresses these controversial matters in the culture because, you know, Facebook is not going to understand any of this. Facebook. Oh, dear Lord. Social media is not the place to go for your detailed, thoughtful, legal, philosophical analysis. So you've got me. Best available. 524 on News Radio 92.3. We'll talk about this more throughout the day because genuinely, the big takeaway from most news sources has been the justices are skeptical about Colorado's claims. The justices seem to think that this is a free speech discrimination of viewpoint issue. And I think their analysis, right? I mean, I think the Supreme Court's going to strike down the Colorado law. I think it might even be 9-0. Even Justice Kagan was like, bro, this is viewpoint censorship. I mean, that's not a quote, but that's largely what she said. But there was a response to her, which was, I thought, quite thoughtful. So anyway, we'll talk about it throughout the day. But just like many things with the Supreme Court, realize it's a lot more complicated than you think. It's a lot closer of a call than you want to think. And it's going to be interesting to see what they write about this 9 months from now when they release the opinion. I'm Andrew McKay.
News Radio 92.3 is proud to be a partner in the success of a lot of local businesses. We want your business to be part of this success story with our unique platform to showcase your powerful message. Every day, News Radio's Pensacola Expert Panel provides an opportunity unlike any other show. Hi, I'm Meg, host of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Let us help you share your message. Call Jeff Wayne to get you and your business part of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Call 850-262-6000.
Let's go. You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight flu, pneumococcal pneumonia, RSV, and COVID-19. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and help strengthen your immune response. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. Schedule in minutes at VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
It all comes down to this, folks.
Yep, the entire season is on the line.
But my throat has officially thrown in the towel.
Sounds like you need Vicks VapoCool drops. They're max strength, hand vaporized sore throat pain.
Whoa! These VapoCool drops hit fast!
Speaking of fast, did you just see that play?
Yeah, he vaporized that ball.
That pun should have come with a penalty.
Vaporize sore throat pain with Vicks VapoCool drops. Use as directed.
Want to win tickets to Florida State home games? Download our News Radio Pensacola app, then tap that app.
Tap that app
to enter Monday through Friday on News Radio 92.3.
Why would Hedley Lamarr care about where the choo-choo goes?
Don't know. Mongo only pawn in game of life.
So much more than pawn. 527 here on News. Hey, I don't know what I was thinking. 527 here on News Radio. Yeah, woo, we're done. I'm Andrew McKay. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. A Florida lawmaker pushing to honor Charlie Kirk.
Oh, please do not get me started at 527 in the morning on this.
I'm sorry, I already said the first line. I can't stop now.
Oh, my God. This is...
I got to keep going. I got to push through.
Tell him. This is genuine, utter nonsense. Go on.
So Republican Representative Kevin Steele has filed a bill that would, if approved, require roads or sections of roads on public college campuses to be named after Charlie Kirk. HB 113 would cut state funding for any college campuses that do not comply.
That's every college or university in the state of Florida. All the junior colleges, all the universities. Every single one is going to have Charlie Kirk Boulevard or Charlie Kirk Way or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a lot to say about this. Later, though. Go ahead, David.
All right. Well, two American League teams now locked into the 2-1 division round series. The Mariners defeated the Tigers, and the Yankees defeated the Blue Jays yesterday. And, Andrew, we've got an update. On, you know, yesterday we said LeBron James had a really big decision he was going to be making.
You mean the ad?
Well, apparently, yeah, this turned out to be, he's not retiring. No retirement for LeBron James. His big announcement is that he is partnering with Hennessy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
So now we're participating in the ad. Good for us. David, thanks so much for the update.
Well, when you put it like that.
529 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. Hey, if you need to get any kind of electrical or air conditioning or heating or plumbing work done inside your home, Peden does all of that. They didn't start that way. You know, they didn't start as a company that did it all. They started as the company that Robert Peden thought, I think I can do air conditioning because I'm hot and I've learned how to make myself not be hot. And so I can help other people with this back in 1969. And so he did. He started as a little company just to do air conditioning. And then, of course, you're doing air conditioning, you might as well do heating. And if you're going to do heating and air conditioning, well, I mean, you might as well do electrical. And you're going to do electrical and you're inside the house working on stuff, might as well do plumbing. So they do all of that, right? And now they're this massive company that works everywhere from Tallahassee all the way over to Mobile and, you know, does 100% satisfaction guarantee on all their work and has good quality products and good quality people and shows up and is trustworthy and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's where they are today after all of these years being in business. Now at Peden, when you choose the repair that their professionals recommend, they'll waive the dispatch fee. You know, there's a certain fee to have them come out and look at what your problem is. Well, if you do what they want you to do, then they'll waive the dispatch fee, and you'll get a full year of SmartCare membership for free included with the repair. Call or book online or find out more information at Peden, P-E-A-D-E-N.com. Making strides against breast cancer, the walk is Seville Square, October 25th. Activities kick off at 8 a.m.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Court date for the man who used to run the FBI, James Comey, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, in front of a Senate panel.
Comey was indicted by one of the most liberal grand juries in the United States.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson explains the charges.
False statement within the jurisdiction of the legislative branch of the U.S. government and obstruction of a congressional proceeding. There will be no perp walk today or frog march for James Comey. There will be no parade in front of the media. It is unclear, though, if an arrest is also planned.
Day 8 in the partial government shutdown, lawmakers in the upper chamber expected to hold a 6th procedural vote later this morning to try and end the stalemate. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. It's partly cloudy right now and 75 degrees here in Pensacola. We'll get to our forecast with meteorologist Brooke Richardson and Channel 3 in just a few minutes. Reports of a murder-suicide in Escambia County in McDavid on Century Boulevard. Deputies say they were called to that scene Monday to find a male and a female, both deceased from gunshot wounds. No other details on that incident have been released at this time. Well, the new owner of the Tampa Bay Rays says they intend to have a new ballpark in place for opening day in 2029.
It's no secret that we need a new forever home to secure the Rays' long-term future in Tampa Bay. And delivering upon that objective will be our first priority.
And that's Patrick Lupski from the First News conference since he acquired the team. He says he wants to model a stadium and a mixed-use development on the Atlanta Braves complex, but so far he has not settled on a site for that. The group led by Lupski acquired the Rays last week after Hurricane Milton scuttled plans for redevelopment of the team's current home at Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg. Florida's efforts to attract law enforcement officers appear to be paying off. Governor DeSantis announcing that recruitment bonuses of $5,000 have now been awarded to almost 9,500 new hires. The Florida Law Enforcement Recruitment Bonus Program started 3 years ago. The governor said it's led to over 2,000 law enforcement officers from more than 50 states and territories relocating to Florida. Fort Walton Beach man's been sentenced to 4 years in prison for a fatal hit-and-run crash in Okaloosa County in August of 2023. Prosecutors say Alexander Edwards hit a 25-year-old man walking along the road on General M. Bond Boulevard, then drove off. Edwards fled the state and was later arrested in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's 534 News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be looking at a small chance of rain this afternoon, 40% chance overall, otherwise mostly sunny skies, high near 88 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 71. For Thursday, small 20% chance of a stray shower, otherwise sunny skies, high near 86. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 69. Looking nice and sunny on Friday with a high near 80 degrees, and Friday night, temperatures dropping near 62. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, we've got 75 degrees, partly cloudy skies. Your next news at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel this Friday at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service technicians, they hire students from George Stone Technical College. Have a boating question for Stefan? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them this Friday at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Are you looking for the best news and talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
It's kind of funny. I have here in studio with me, I have Mark Faulkner, who is the president and CEO of Baptist Healthcare, and Casey Gartman, who is the vice president of external relations for Baptist Hospital. And if you do not recognize it, that is the theme music for the new General Hospital. It kind of cracked me up because Mark was like, "What's that?" And Casey's like rocking it out. I would have played the old one, but it's got the ambulance sound, the siren, and you're not really supposed to air a siren. You know, it's not a good idea generally. So anyway, Mark Faulkner, Casey Gartman, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News. Mark, we had you on a lot during COVID. And of course, Casey, dear friend, you know, great to have you guys. So welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thank you. It's great to be with you this morning. Yeah,
thanks for having us, Andrew.
So finally, you don't own the property anymore. The old Baptist Hospital belongs to the city of Pensacola. First things first, how much relief did last Monday bring?
Well, I probably more excitement than relief.
Okay.
When we shared our plans to construct a replacement hospital, we had three components of that vision. The first, obviously, is to create and construct a world-class modern healthcare facility, which certainly we lacked at the Legacy Campus. The second commitment was to use local trades and subs and contract workers in the construction, keep the money here. And the third was some redevelopment vision for that Legacy Campus that we were vacating. And so 2 years later, we just celebrated our second anniversary of being in the new
campus. That's crazy. I can't believe it's 2 years.
Yeah, September is when we moved, as you might recall, moved that hospital in 6 hours into the new place. But also,
easy day.
Yeah, right. You know, just another day at General Hospital. But also, last week, to your point, was another key milestone of those three components, and that was the closing of the donation where we handed over the property and the ownership of the property, the 51 acres in total, to the city of Pensacola for the redevelopment to continue on. Now, also recall that still moving forward in that is 11 acres that was already purchased by Paces Foundation to construct housing for both senior and workforce attainable housing. We took the proceeds of that sale, the $3 million for that 11 acres, and we donated it along with the land to the city, as well as an additional roughly $3 million in total of about $5.8 million. So we gave the keys, we gave the check, and the city is now the owner of that property.
All right, I'm going to give you a radio tip. You got to be right on top of the microphone.
Gotcha.
I know you're an in-person guy. I've seen you speak in person so many times, but it's like right here. It's just a funny little thing. All right, so I wanted to have you on in part to talk about where we're at now, but also because there have been a lot of things said. And I think not all the things that have been said have been 100% accurate. And I thought it'd be an interesting chance for you guys to maybe respond to some of this. Let's just dive in. One of the allegations has been, look, you guys got all this money, massive amount of money, nearly $1 billion in bonding capacity for a hospital that was, I mean, it wasn't even $700 million. $660 million hospital. Why couldn't you use some of that money to demolish the hospital yourselves at your own expense? I mean, it's your property. It's a code enforcement problem if you don't maintain it. Why does the state or the county or the city or anybody else need to fund this? Can't that money, isn't it money fungible? Can't you just use it to go to demolish the hospital?
Back in June of 2019, we made the announcement we're moving, and we proceeded to put together a plan for financing. What's it going to cost to construct a modern-day hospital? And we went in December, so 4 or 5 months later, with a plan up to over $900 million of potential bond financing to include the hospital as well as investments maybe at Gulf Breeze or at Lakeview or the Legacy Campus and investing there in other places. At the end of the day, we went to the bond market in June of 2020, 6 weeks before COVID hit, and for an issue of about $542 million. So what was going to be over $900 actually ended up being about $540 to construct the new hospital.
Okay.
That was the plan. That was always the plan. Now, when we also made that commitment that we're moving, we said we're going to leave stuff behind.
Right.
All we're going to move is the inpatient and outpatient services to I-110 and Brent Lane. And behind, we would leave our administrative offices, our behavioral health hospital, and other functions. That was the plan to keep that campus vibrant and active. Now, as that plan evolved, COVID hit, a lot of our employees went home to work from home, and we were asked, could we move everything? Well, yeah, we could consider moving everything. What do you mean? Well, move behavioral health, move the admin functions, because it would be more likely to be redeveloped if everything was vacated. So we agreed to that. And so from a $550 million construction budget jumped to $650 as we constructed additional space on the legacy on the new campus, as well as a new behavioral health inpatient hospital. And so that's what changed as we shifted our plans to accommodate vacating the entirety of that campus. Why would we do that?
The original plan was to have two locations, New Baptist and Old Baptist, with a lot of facilities staying at Old Baptist. Then COVID hit, and you guys were asked, could you move it all? Asked by whom? Like your board of directors, City of Pensacola, county, who asked?
The county.
The county asked.
A member of the county, yes.
Oh,
county.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, fair enough. So county government.
Correct.
Okay. So you retooled, you decided to move the whole campus. That would facilitate redevelopment, and you were continuing. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, because the last we wanted to leave behind was a vacated, empty medical facility. We already have enough of those around.
Right.
In town.
North Palafox.
Yes. So we looked, for example, in Birmingham, Alabama, Caraway Methodist Hospital closed its doors 20 years ago. It became blight. It became crime. It became a problem. Ultimately, the city of Birmingham purchased that. It's now being redeveloped as we speak. But we didn't want that to happen. We could have left it boarded up. We could have left a fence up and said, it's not our problem. We'll deal with.
You'll pay the code enforcement fines or whatever.
But we wanted to do better because we're of this community and for this community. And we made a choice. And that choice was to participate actively in creating a redevelopment vision. We paid about $2 million to craft a vision of what this could become. And we learned it could be housing, an anchor site perhaps, education, retail, on and on. But we don't do development. We do healthcare.
Right.
But we wanted to get this strategy and vision to a place to hand it off to a developer or somebody who could do that. And the city was the natural partner because they have access to grants and appropriations that we as a not-for-profit would never have access to. And so that was the plan. And fortunately, we have a mayor and we have a city council that has vision that accepted this donation and is now embracing that with the potential of the redevelopment now underway.
So it wound up making sense to do. I understand the change of heart, and that also included the why you didn't leave medical facilities behind, because the idea was this needs to be, we need to get out so that it can be redeveloped. And that might include some medical facilities, but it's not really possible to sort of keep what was there and also build what's supposed to be new, right?
We've never said we're not going to make sure there's health care provided on that campus. And I think that's one of the misstatements and misunderstandings that's been brought forward. No, we're still committed to that. Now, incidentally, just down the road is Community Health Northwest Florida on Palafox Street, 1,600 yards from that legacy campus. And so we know that it's important to have accessible primary care, urgent care on or near that facility. And Community Health does an amazing job in our community in multiple locations, including that location in Jackson Street as well. But we're still evaluating that. In fact, we, in addition to donating the land we had promised, we've added three additional buildings donated to the city for the intention of one of those being converted for healthcare delivery. Right. So that commitment has not been tossed by the wayside. We still are focused on making sure that immediacy of 32501 has access to healthcare.
Kind of going back to the original question I asked, and I think a question a lot of people have is, it's your building. Why should the public, through tax dollars of any sort, whether it's grants from the state or the county or the city, why shouldn't you guys just pay for the demolishment? I mean, you know, it was your property. Why shouldn't that come out of your fund? I mean, you've got these hundreds of millions of dollars sloshing around. You're obviously a super wealthy company. You know,
right.
That's tough. But, I mean, this is the perception people sure. have. So when people ask that question, you know, how do you respond?
Well, that's not something that I didn't consider, and our board as well. Could we have paid for the demolition, take the lowest bidder, mm-hmm. demolished everything, sold it for the highest bidder as a greenfield site, and made money?
Because you would still own it,
right? We'd still own it. We'd tear down the buildings. We'd sell it to a developer, and it would become whatever that developer chose for it to become, mm-hmm. which may not be what the community would want. And so we wanted to protect what the community said would be important, and that is, right now, attainable housing. Could it be 51 acres of high development? Potentially, right off of North Hill. And so that was something that we considered all the way through this process. We could just keep owning it. We could just tear it down. We could just sell it to the highest bidder and let it be redeveloped.
So the theory was that if we partner with these other folks doing something that's going to be of interest and benefit to all of them, then it makes sense for them to shoulder some of the burden.
Yes, Andrew, what we learned through this process really is that with the property in the hands of a governmental entity, mm-hmm. they have access to so many more grants and funding sources than us as a private company would. So when we approached the state of Florida to help the city with this demolition, and Senator Broxson, we are so grateful to him for helping secure $7 million through the Florida legislature for this, and then again putting in our own almost $6 million, left a little bit of a shortfall. But you have to remember, through all of this, Andrew, also, we are a not-for-profit organization who last year alone provided $61 million in charity care to our community through uncompensated care, where we care for the uninsured, and Medicaid shortfalls, the difference between what Medicaid pays us to care for these patients and then what we have to shoulder on that remaining cost.
You say $61
million? $61 million in fiscal year 2024.
So uncompensated care greater than the total revenues of the EMS system in Escambia County.
Yes.
Right. $58 million. I mean,
yes.
You know.
And these are actual costs. These aren't charges. Right. These are actual costs of providing care. But it's part of our commitment as a local 501c3 not-for-profit. We're here to meet the needs of the entirety of the community.
Those were the kind of the big questions I think people had. I'm not sure that some of the other things matter as much, but since we're kind of running short on time, we're talking to Mark Faulkner from Baptist Hospital and Casey Gartman. I just wanted to ask two things. One is, 2 years in, how is the new campus doing?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I'll speak on behalf of our team members who were just thrilled to be in this new campus, modern. Not only is it modern bricks and mortar, very warm and healing environment, but the technology, 90% of everything that's in there is brand new, mm-hmm. In terms of the technology, but our patients as well. We're in the top 15% nationally in patient satisfaction right now. Our turnover and vacancy rates are back to pre-pandemic levels. We're a 4-star facility as CMS ranked. So by all indicators, beyond just my own opinion, things are going extremely well. We continue to grow. We've added over 230 new jobs, net new jobs, to the organization since we moved. 230, paying well over $65,000 in salary. That's a significant economic impact.
Right.
We didn't ask for economic development dollars. We don't ask for subsidies. We just do it and do the right thing as an organization for the community.
And then you still have plans to build that next facility in the second tree grove over on the west side of the new campus. Is that right?
Well, the Henderson building is built.
Oh, it's built. Okay.
I
drive by it all the time. I should know, but I'm,
well,
you know.
It is, but right now there's construction going in the top two floors. We're constructing a two-floor inpatient Rehab Hospital,
okay,
in partnership with PAM Health. It's a joint venture, and so those top two floors will be occupied, and once that's done, the entire campus will be full. We'll be needing to expand in other ways in the future.
And Casey, I know you and I were talking a little bit before. We've been having this conversation all day about EMS, the billing, working with ambulances. We've only got about a minute, but you've been working with the county, with Director Watts from EMS, on solving the problem of billing, good patients, not abusing the system, just kind of all of that.
Yes, and we've been having, as Chief Watts alluded to at the meeting, direct conversations with him and his team about how we could partner together to help reduce some of this bad debt that the county is incurring from what we at times call frequent flyers, those that call on 911 services more than necessary. And so what ways could we as a community be creative about how to try to solve those problems? One, for our patients, so that we are reducing readmission rates when they have chronic conditions such as COPD, CHF, and care for them where they need it at home rather than them calling 911 and coming back to the hospital. That then also helps Escambia County EMS so that they can focus on what are true emergent needs in our community and be there when actual traumas happen.
And the general principle that if we're not wasting resources, that's good for the county services, that's good for the Baptist services, that's
good
for everybody, right?
So we are open to conversations with the county again about how we can collectively approach this and focus on this challenge.
Very good. Well, we are totally out of time, but Mark Faulkner, the president and CEO of Baptist Healthcare, Casey Garment, the external relations vice president. I'm amazed at how much you guys helped us navigate our way through COVID and talk about all the issues there. So I appreciate that longstanding relationship. And for you guys coming in today to kind of talk about some of these things, answer these questions for the community. Thank you for what you do. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. We appreciate you.
Absolutely. 551 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Just thought it was a pretty interesting conversation and not one that's been had a lot. And obviously, you know, there's been a lot of things kind of hanging out there with transferring the facility. But now that that's all over, it's good to hear from Baptist, you know, a little bit more candidly about some things maybe than they were able to say before that deal was all completed. So I appreciate the time that they both gave me yesterday. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty are outstanding at doing that. 165 homes sold last year, 175 the year before that, 200 plus the year before that. And, you know, there's been a change in the market. Obviously, it's a little bit more work to sell homes these days than remember a couple of years ago when it was, you know, hey, I'm thinking about selling my four offers. You know, like that's how it was for a while. And, you know, thankfully, in a way, that's calmed down because that's what went to the price raises. But, you know, back then it was helpful to have a good agent. Now, when it takes a little bit more work, it's even more valuable to have a good agent because, you know, they'll stage your home properly. They'll photograph it. They'll list it. They'll price it and do open houses and in a way that will get you the best possible result selling. And same thing on the buying side. They know what the right price is. Therefore, they can help you haggle and help you negotiate and figure out how to get the best deal. And that's even on new houses. You know, a lot of times you think, well, I don't need a real estate agent for a new build. And, I mean, you don't have to have one. But think about what they can do to help you. Get the price right, because a lot of the builders are very motivated with a slower market. Also, they know what's normal. They know what you can expect and ask for. And when it comes to taking possession of the house, Christine always says, I'm the blue tape queen. I will find everything that's wrong with that house, and you'll get it fixed so that you get the new house you deserve. A lot of times people buy a new house, and, you know, you just don't know what you can demand, and you're not familiar with the concept or the transaction. And so you kind of, well, that's all right. That's all right. You kind of ignore it when she's like, oh, no, you bought a new house. You get a new house. And that kind of stuff is what you get when you have a professional real estate agent helping you. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 29th to Pensacola Beach. Presented by IT Gulf Coast and Blue Angels AFSEA Chapter, get connected with top-level cybersecurity, AI,
and emerging technology experts. The conference features a free career fair, prizes, and an amazing welcome reception on Pensacola Beach. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Visit itenwired.com for tickets.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
What does New South Proud mean? It means you can save 35% on windows and doors. And not just any windows and doors. We're talking New South American-made windows and doors that offer premium protection from hurricanes, intruders, and noise. And they're guaranteed for life. Get 35% off American-made windows and doors until October 31st, 2025. Call 800-NEW-WINDOWS. Visit newsouthwindow.com/deal for details.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Rick, you might have stabbed the guy in the face.
What?
The trident. From Anchorman.
That's right.
5:56, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Attorney General Pam Bondi facing tough questions from senators on Capitol Hill yesterday. Democrats grilled her on issues including the National Guard deployment, Jeffrey Epstein, former FBI Director James Comey's indictment, and accusing her of targeting Trump's political foes. Bondi pushed back, saying Democrats ignored legal actions against Trump.
And Chuck Schumer should apologize for his entire career. That was one of her lines. In the 5 hours. Anyway, go ahead, David.
The Senate.
Give me a tight hour. You know, everybody gets 2 minutes. Move on. Anyway, go ahead.
The Senate's set to vote today on two bills aimed at ending the government shutdown. Both measures failed to reach the 60 votes needed on Monday. Majority Leader John Thune says that voting will continue on that. The shutdown now has furloughed about 750,000 federal workers.
Interesting note on that is apparently the White House is now indicating that furloughed workers who are not working will be, which is what furlough means, you're not working, but you keep your job and when the job is there, that they're not anticipating back pay for people who aren't working. Federal workers who are working without pay, air traffic controllers, military, you're going to get paid. People who are furloughed who are not working, they're now saying will not get paid, which I think is a very interesting move. Whether it's legal or not remains to be seen, but very interesting move because that gives, incentive to solve the problem. I mean, federal workers who were getting vacation and paid in the future,
right?
Like, keep this up. This is great. I can clean up my house and, you know, take care of my problems.
It's a game changer for sure.
And especially because the theory is that so many more Democrat voters are, you know, motivated in this way. So, I don't know. We'll see if it works. And, again, we'll see if it's legal. But that's the strategy right now.
Absolutely. And, the Texas National Guard has arrived in Illinois, joining state forces at the Elwood Army Reserve Center south of Chicago. It's not clear when exactly they're going to be deployed into the streets of Chicago. The city and state have filed a lawsuit to attempt to block the deployment, though.
You know, I wonder if anybody in the National Guard has any kind of conversation like this. Where are you going this weekend? We're going to Chicago. Oh, man, I get to go to New Orleans. Oh, I get to go to Portland. You know? Oh, you got to go to Portland?
Where were these?
I got to go to D.C. You got to go to New York. All I got was a T-shirt. You know, like.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Where were these deployments when I was in the National Guard? I answered the phone. Well, where are we going?
Iraq.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we go.
I've always wanted to go to Chicago. And I just lived in Texas my whole life. You know, it's like the Trump travel service, and some people are not getting great travel out of this. Others are getting, you know, a pretty good deal. I mean, you know, Taste of Chicago's over, but you can still watch the Cubs in the postseason, maybe. I don't know. 437-1620. Andrew, why are you making light of something that is so significant, a constitutional violation? Okay, we have those conversations, too. just, you know, why not? Anyway, I do think it's a very interesting question, this. And it kind of makes sense, right? Like, we're not getting the work product of the people. Therefore, why should we be spending money on labor for work that's not being done? That's always bothered me about back pay for furloughed employees.